The final presidential debate focused more on issues than interruptions, yet there were some jabs, with President Trump taking issue with Joe Biden's pandemic approach.
We're learning to live with it. We have no choice. We can't lock ourselves up in a basement like Joe does.
The former vice president fired back.
He says that we're learning to live with it. People are learning to die with it.
We'll talk to our political reporter about the key takeaways and what to expect in this final stretch of the campaign. Plus, a look at what history tells us about election results and stock performance. It's Friday, October 23rd. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Walmart is suing the federal government ahead of an expected lawsuit from the Justice Department over opioids. The preemptive suit by Walmart argues federal agencies have no basis to seek civil damages for pharmacy practices. The retail giant is among several companies that have been sued by state and local governments for allegedly helping to fuel the opioid crisis. Walmart has denied the allegations and said opioid dispensing is a small part of its business. The Justice Department and DEA declined to comment following Walmart's suit. Uber and Lyft must comply with an order to reclassify their drivers as employees following a court ruling in California. The move would expand benefits for drivers, including paid sick days and health insurance. Uber and Lyft said they are considering appealing Thursday's decision to California Supreme Court. Separately, both companies are part of a November 3rd ballot initiative, which would exempt them from the classification. That result would supersede any court ruling. The CEOs of Twitter and Facebook could face subpoenas from the Senate Judiciary Committee over their handling of a New York Post article about the son of Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. The panel voted to authorize Chairman Lindsey Graham to issue subpoenas to Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey, although no hearing has been set. Facebook and Twitter declined to comment, as did a spokeswoman for the New York Post. The New York Post is owned by News Corp, which owns the Wall Street Journal. With the election just around the corner, investors may be watching every move on the campaign trail, but history suggests that it doesn't necessarily matter who wins in November, because stocks tend to go up anyway. Still, there are some exceptions. Our markets reporter David Hadari explains.
So any investors scared of the stock market plunging depending on who wins next month's election can breathe relatively easy. That's because stocks, on average, tend to go up regardless of who wins the White House. Of course, analysts warn that anything can happen and that investors shouldn't try anything that's overly ambitious, but it's still very rare for stocks to sell off after elections. Of course, there are exceptions, though. In 2016, the S&P rose more than average in anticipation of President Trump's cut to taxes and regulation. The contested election in 2000 also appeared to be bad for stocks, and it's that precedent of a disputed result in 2000 stinging the stock market that has investors worried this time around as well.
The candidates in this current election met for a final debate last night, one with a very different tone from the first. We'll look at the key differences after the break. We focus now on the final debate of the 2020 presidential campaign, with President Trump and Joe Biden taking the stage last night in Nashville. COVID-19 was a major theme, of course, including this assessment from the president.
We're rounding the turn. We're rounding the corner. It's going away.
Biden pushed back on accusations he's too eager to lock down.
I'm going to shut down the virus, not the country.
Let's bring in national politics reporter Tarini Pardee. Good morning, Tarini.
Good morning.
The tone and the temperament of the evening is worth noting, since it was quite a contrast from the last debate.
It definitely was very different from the first presidential debate. The president clearly adopted a more measured tone. He had a different demeanor, which resulted in a more substantive policy discussion between the two candidates. In part, that was because the debate commission announced a change earlier this week and said they would be muting the candidates' mics part of the time. We definitely saw fewer interruptions between the two candidates, between the candidates and the moderator. There was clearly more emphasis on presenting their arguments on the various policy issues that came up, rather than just interjecting and interrupting the opponent as they were speaking, as we saw in the first presidential debate.
With that said, there are some clear differences of opinion on the issues, including the pandemic, which impacts all aspects of life, including our health and economic stability. Let's first listen to Joe Biden.
We're about to go into a dark winter, and he has no clear plan, and there's no prospect that there's going to be a vaccine available for the majority of the American people before the middle of next year.
And now President Trump.
You know, I've said it often, the cure cannot be worse than the problem itself. And that's what's happening. And he wants to close down. He'll close down the country if one person in our massive bureaucracy says we should close it down.
Tarini, the coronavirus is still very much a central issue of this campaign. And both of the candidates are offering distinct approaches to the pandemic to win over voters.
You know, this is a big issue for voters. It is affecting their daily lives. It has disrupted their daily lives. Many Americans have lost their jobs. In many cases, kids are home from school. It's really changed our day-to-day lives. And this is what many voters are thinking of when they go to vote for the president of the United States. And so the president here is trying to make the case that he has done all he could and that the virus isn't as big of an issue anymore. He is trying to make sure that voters focus on potentially other issues like the economy, you know, making the case that the economy was great before the pandemic and that Trump would be the candidate who would make it great again and sort of bring the economy back to where it was before the pandemic. Meanwhile, Biden is focusing on this issue, making the point that this is something that voters care about. This is something that they're thinking about every single day, and that we shouldn't forget about all the Americans who are dying daily from this virus. He went on to say that, you know, anyone who's responsible for that many deaths should not remain president of the United States of America. And that's essentially been his argument for the last few months.
Let's move to the topic of racial injustice. Let's listen to this exchange, starting with President Trump.
It makes me sad because I am the least racist person. I can't even see the audience because it's so dark, but I don't care who's in the audience. I'm the least racist person in this room.
And now Joe Biden.
He pours fuel on every single racist fire. Every single one. Started off his campaign coming down the escalator saying he's going to get rid of those Mexican rapists.
Tarini, give us some context about how the two men approach these issues.
So President Trump is using, you know, these discussions about racial injustice to essentially bring it back to his campaign message of law and order, because he thinks that that will be a message that appeals to suburban women. He also, at the same time, though, tries to talk about the criminal justice reform bill that he passed. And he tried to attack Joe Biden on the debate stage for the crime bill that he voted for when he was senator, saying that, you know, he had done more for Black Americans than Joe Biden had in terms of dealing with the injustices in the criminal justice system.
And Biden did say his support for certain tough on crime policies in the 80s and 90s was a mistake. Discussion also focused on family relationships, conflicts of interest, and investments. Moderator Kristen Welker asked the president about a company bank account in China.
So I closed it before I even ran for president, let alone became president. Big difference. He is the vice president of the United States, and his son, his brother, and his other brother are getting rich. They're like a vacuum cleaner. They're sucking up money every place he goes.
Okay, President Trump, thank you.
Early in the discussion of these topics, Biden said nothing was unethical in response to a question about his son's business dealings. Later, he sought to focus the conversation on the economy.
There's a reason why he's bringing up all this malarkey. There's a reason for it. He doesn't want to talk about the substantive issues. It's not about his family and my family. It's about your family. And your family's hurting badly.
Tarini, the president is using an old tactic in these remaining days of the campaign to close his case. Explain that.
That's right. So the president is trying to essentially use a strategy from his 2016 campaign in portraying his Democratic opponent as corrupt. He did this with Hillary Clinton, and it seemed to work for her because it was pulling her likability numbers down. But we have not seen that yet with Joe Biden. He's been telegraphing for days that he would confront Joe Biden on the business dealings of his son, Hunter Biden, even though there has been no evidence of wrongdoing on Joe Biden's part, including in a report by Senate Republicans. The president brought these business dealings up again on the debate stage, and Biden said he has not taken a penny from any foreign source in his life. He also tried to turn the tables on Trump and pointed to the president's tax returns and said that, you know, it's unclear what the president's business dealings and his family's business dealings have been because they have not released their tax returns.
As we look ahead at the calendar, a little bit more than a week left until Election Day, several battleground states appear to be close. What will we see from the campaigns?
I think in the final weeks, you'll see more in-person campaigning. We're definitely seeing that on the Trump side already. He's been doing several rallies in swing states. And we're seeing some of that from the Democratic side as well. We're seeing former Vice President Biden took some time off for debate prep and was not out as much in the last few days. But he has been putting more events on his calendar. We also saw former President Obama back on the campaign trail on their behalf and gave a speech. Which was essentially a strong rebuke of the president and his handling of the pandemic.
National politics reporter Tarini Pardi, appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, we've seen tools like Slack and Zoom make office jobs possible to do at home during the pandemic. But imagine restocking grocery shelves, delivering packages, or even performing surgery remotely. Technology, known as telepresence, goes beyond just communicating and file sharing. It allows people to do physical work from a distance. Some jobs could see more robots, virtual reality headsets, smart glass, and drones performing physical tasks as humans operate somewhere else. But our tech columnist Christopher Mims says these remote work advancements come with caveats.
The challenge always is the short-term disruption. If someone gets pushed out of a job, economies almost always find another way to employ that person. But the two-part question that has to be asked is, how long does it take for that person to shift into another role? And is that job better or worse than the one that they were pushed out of? So with a lot of this kind of automation, advocates of it argue that robots replace the three D's, dull, dirty, and dangerous jobs. However, you know, a lot of those jobs are still the few that are left that are well-paying, that are unionized. So, you know, if a bunch of UPS drivers get pushed out of their jobs by autonomous vehicles or remotely piloted vehicles, that's a major problem for hundreds of thousands of individuals.
And that's what's news for Friday. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.